I'm Ryan.
And I'm Talia.
We're both licensed marriage and family therapists.
And today,
like every day,
we're here to debunk myths
and deliver truth about dating, relationships, and everything in between.
Trust us.
It's awesome. Episode 104.
Can you believe it?
I can believe it. And Talia, I've told you a million times.
You are clear with me?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm convinced I was clear with you.
I don't think I heard it that way. I think you could have been more clear. I don't know that you actually said what you think you said.
I always say exactly what I mean about the widgets and the thingies and the kebabs. Oh, wait, I actually like kebabs.
Well, I think then maybe this is a classic case of I didn't interpret it right.
I think it's a classic case of a clarity conundrum.
Favorite. And if anybody is watching this or listening, then you can see that I'm looking down because I have a new friend with me.
Yeah, we have a special guest star on the podcast today.
Her name is Pancake. And we're training her to be a therapy dog. So I will be getting her adjusted to the office. But we will be doing our episode on this topic that was inspired by a lot of the work that Ryan and I do with pretty much every client and couple that we work with, where it's not a he said, she said, as much as it is, no, I was very clear with you. I said this to you. And the other partner's like, no, you didn't. And this isn't gaslighting. This isn't you actually didn't say it. It's truly, I thought what I vocalized to you was what I meant to say. And I realize now when you interpreted it back to me or when you gave it back that either I didn't say it right, I wasn't quite as vulnerable as I thought, or where I said it, you couldn't hear me. I thought I was this, but I only explained the negative to it. And that's a classic thing, is that we don't actually say what we want. We say what will happen if we don't get it. So there's more of a threat or an ultimatum, if you will, of like, I need this or else, or if this doesn't happen, I'm this, rather than what it would mean for me if this were to occur would be this. Could we do that in our relationship? And I think that's a huge part of a partnership, is learning how to translate for each other. And we don't always get it right the first time. So it's really important to verify what our partners have interpreted and ask ourselves, did I actually ask for that thing all those years? Or did I hint at it? Did I only explain if it didn't happen, et cetera? So that's my intro.
Oh, yeah. Because so often we'll have couples come in and one partner says, like, I've told them 1,000 times XYZ. And one scenario that is common when it starts off that way, as we're sitting there as a therapist kind of listening, realizing, well, actually, maybe you didn't share it as clearly as you thought, like you've hinted at it or you've suggested, or it was kind of not quite that clear, but it feels clear to the person sharing, and or the person hearing it, it's kind of lost in translation. I am just going to reiterate what you said, just because it's so important. We're talking this specific scenario, not gaslighting, I hear it and I dismiss it, or I hear it and it's scary to address it or something. There's a lot of different scenarios where one partner can come in and say, I've said it 1,000 times, and then something doesn't resolve. This is specifically a scenario where as we, the therapists, start listening, we're realizing, oh, there really isn't quite mutual clarity on this. There is some static somewhere in the communication.
There is a huge difference when it comes to what we want to tell our partner and maybe some of the fears. I think something that's important to talk about is what gets in the way. What gets in the way of us being honest, and what gets in the way of us not actually sharing that could be a previous time that didn't go well, could be when we thought we said it, they didn't actually reciprocate what we asked for. So we figured, why ever ask again? I asked you once, or I told you 10,000 times, you never said anything. And it could also come from feeling.
Okay, we had a little break there, taking care of Pancake. I think I'm going to pick up where you started, Talia, about some of the common ways that you see the kind of clarity miss in relationships. I know you have a couple of ideas. I have some examples that are kind of common that I see, where the partner who's going, I've said it 1,000 times, they maybe said it fully, whatever they wanted to be understood about once.
Yes.
For example, maybe they did a really great thing about the dishes in the sink. Hey, when I see all the dishes in the sink, I feel unimportant, uncared for, and unloved. Wow. Yeah. Okay, cool. You're getting to some stuff. But that was years ago. And then after that one time sharing where maybe it didn't go so well, or maybe something else was happening where it just doesn't, it didn't really land. Then that partner started, like, every time seeing dishes in the sink, be like, see, dish in the sink, can you do the dishes? Oh, dish in the sink, can you do the dishes? Mm-hmm. And what comes out is that in that partner's head, they did say the same thing 1,000 times. True. But it wasn't the super clear message of what was really going on.
And what the need would be, what the need that would be met would be if their request was actually granted. And I think that's where appreciating when the person does something rather than only scolding them or noticing when they don't do it really is key. Because if we're only focusing on the negative and what we don't want, then we're going to see it more often. However, there might be times in that case that you're talking about where that partner is doing the dishes maybe once a week, but not 6 times a week like your partner wants. The once, I think, still counts. Not that we're settling, not that that's all we'll ever want, but I do think that makes a big difference when we start to positively praise ourselves and our partner. That is far more motivating to continue a behavior and to make sure that we were clear on it. Because maybe, and I've said this with many couples I worked with, maybe the request was, hey, could you, I'm trying to think of like a general enough one. Could you pick up around the house? I don't know what that means. Do you want me to do the dishes? Do you want me to vacuum? Do you want me to dust? Do you want me to do the laundry? I might know, I might not, but I might know what I mean by pick up more. And if I'm not saying that, my partner could be doing the dishes, the laundry, the vacuuming, and I really wanted dusting. And I'm like, I told you to pick up around the house more. And they're like, I literally am. Like, look at all these other things that I'm doing. And I think that really bespeaks, I know you have an idea, that really bespeaks to being so clear and articulate. Women especially don't want to be seen as bossy or demanding at times or like too much. So we often
nag, quote unquote. Nag.
Yeah. Nagging mostly comes from how you ask. And it's different when you bring something up, your partner agrees and you remind them. That is a totally different system than nagging, in my opinion.
Yeah. And like you're also describing, that relates to my point, this idea that we can think that we have shared in each of these moments super clearly because of that first time, but actually because there's a shorthand, can you pick up around the house or can you do this? It really isn't that clear. And so the person who's saying, hey, I've asked 1,000 times about this thing, or I've said this 1,000 times, each of those moments in their brain was a fully clear moment. And so it, in their genuine experience, it's like, I have said this, but to the partner hearing, it's not a fully clear moment. So there's not as many of those that have actually hit. And so then you have very commonly and very genuinely for both partners, but they just come in to sessions with such a different kind of like, if you will, kind of like tally of how often we've communicated about a thing. And so that's one of the cool things about being able to label that communication dynamic to start giving couples some more insight into, oh, it's different for us. Oh, picking up around the house has meant different things. And so just needing to clear that up and starting with, hey, what we thought was clear wasn't clear. And that's okay. And that it can be a normalizing experience for couples.
And being curious about each individual's definition before you agree. That is one of my tips for ending the clarity conundrum, if you will, is, hey, earlier when you said you want me to pick up around the house more, could you share with me what that means? That is something the receiving partner can ask, and the giving partner can also say more kindly in a non-nagging way, what would help me feel closer to you and more respected and equal around the house would be if we could both pick up more around the house, make it mutual. Even if you are the one doing it a lot, you really do want it to be, we are both doing this. So thinking of it in that we, us language, I would love it if we could. How do you see a solution? Do you want to write up a chore chart for us? Do you want to have a weekly meeting? Do you want me to text you a list? Like, being collaborative. So it's not you coming in and saying, I need this done. Here's how I need it done. Here's when I need it done by, or else, because your partner's going to go, yeah, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be clear on
that. I think also like coming in with like, there's separating the clarity of the message with also expectations and assumptions. And so that can be really key to slow things down in a relationship to discuss, well, okay, so what are the expectations and assumptions? And again, just using the easy example of picking up around the house, like if one partner is saying, hey, that's what I've asked for 1,000 times, is there an assumption that then because I've told you that, I expect you to do that regularly on your own? Versus right. another partner who is like, yeah, I heard that. And every time you ask me, I am down. I got you. But that then is the assumption that, well, I expect that you will tell me each time you would like some support and I will happily offer it to you. And that's such a common one. That's why I like to use an example that sometimes it's like one partner going, well, I want you to do it without having to ask. And the other partner is like, I'm always down to do whatever you ask. Like, you know, great. And for both people, that's just their values or their assumptions and their expectations of what being a good partner is. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about, hey, maybe we can be different. And that's where some of the static can come in. So that's one place to explore when you find yourself in a clarity conundrum. Check in and see if this message has some hidden assumptions, some hidden expectations about then what to do moving forward. Because I think it's super useful to look at each moment of communication. It's a very mindful practice of, hey, in this moment right now, I'm talking to you about a thing. Let's clarify what that means for the future also. That's where you add some more clarity into a discussion.
And your point of when we bring up to a partner and they're like, just tell me whatever you need done and I'll do it. I've talked to so many couples and I see it on social media too, that they're like, I shouldn't have to ask. You should see it. You live here as well. Why are we having this discussion again? I wrote you a whatever it is. And I actually just did a video on this the other day about like the mental load, which I think we could do an episode on also. That would be a great topic. That the way that women, and this is not a cop out for men or women to use this as an excuse, but it's a supporting reason, I would say, to your point about expectations and assumptions, it's a supporting reason why we as women often see those things that need to get done differently than men, because most of the time we're in that, like the version of our nervous system or the mind space we're in is diffuse awareness. So I can see things, I can think this, meanwhile this, and then the trash needs to get taken out, and then this, and the kids' soccer game, and the birthday party, and the, like, that is how we often function. Some people also have ADHD, which is another compounding concern, but most of the time, it's the way we view the world. And men, it doesn't mean you aren't able to. That is not the primary way you see the world most of the time. It's focus task to this. It's like step by step. It's not everything all at once. And that can be very frustrating for the partner who is everything all at once focused, we'll call it. How did you not see it? Because I was making a sandwich for lunch. I wasn't thinking about the laundry. Like, I was going to do it after. Well, if I were me, I would have been doing this and then set the washer and the dryer. That, like, we can't compare what we think our partner should do to what we would do or do actually do. And when we have that expectation, yes, is it frustrating that I would have to remind my partner every single time I wanted it to get done? Potentially. After a while, though, I don't know about you, I would say after a few reminders, and if it's on the same day every time, we usually get into a system and a routine. And like with the trash, I don't know where you live at. There's a certain trash day where we're at my house. You have to take the trash out by a certain day. Otherwise, it can sit there or you have to wait. So it's moments like that where you're like, oh, I know that that's a system. And if I lived alone, I'd have to do it anyway. Those are usually the times where you have more success offloading a task to your partner, that they also see the merit or the need in it rather than it being only for you. Not many people are very motivated to only do something because it matters to another person.
Yeah, because there's emotional and physical labor involved in making those changes.
Yeah, it costs energy.
It costs a lot of energy. And then also, like, if one of the things that you're describing is by practicing that, you're actually tapping into the relationship motivation that you can build up, because we tend not to be motivated at first until we see the positive effects.
Yeah.
If it's like, oh, when I take the trash out, I get praise. We really are just like our special guest Pancake.
Yes.
At times, like little animals, where it's like really nice to be like, oh man, I feel so good I took the trash out, because when I came back, my partner's like so happy, affectionate, supportive, appreciative. That really can, then you can start tapping into relational motivation.
Yes.
Another thing from that example that it made me think of is trash as the example. So I don't want to have to ask my partner to take out the trash every time. I've said it once and I'm asking them to do it without thinking. Well, it's really important to come from a place of understanding that you, like, if that's what the person is saying, you're asking your partner to make that behavior change, and you're not willing to make a behavior change to ask each time. And it's not to say that, like, hey, that's not, you know, it's not for us to say what is the right quote unquote way to do it. My point is, if you're noticing that you're in that place of, I don't want to have to ask every time, and you're imagining you have to ask every time to take the trash out, that emotional stress you're having about not wanting to have to ask is the exact emotional stress you're asking your partner to experience by not being asked. The whole point is they're both behavior changes.
Yes.
Either there's the one partner doing a behavior change of having to remember and put emotional labor into doing it every time, which is a huge change, or you have to go into the behavior change of always asking. Obviously, in this example, that's difficult because a person wants, who's asking for this change from the partner to take the trash out without being asked, is going, oh, I don't want to have to ask. I'm just trying to like throw that out as like build empathy and understanding that, well, who said it's because of, or let's put it a different way. Build some empathy and understanding, because it's assumptions and expectations that you, quote, shouldn't have to ask that are making you push it onto your partner, as opposed to going, oh, wait a second, maybe I can do the behavior change and I can be the one to do the work to ask each time. And I just want to point out, like, again, I'm not recommending that's what you do. Like, that has to be the case. I do. It's just to, from this example where the different pieces lie. I think what is important that I do recommend is that couples talk about that openly, and that couples come to a collaborative decision about, okay, how do we want to go about this mm-hmm. together? Mm-hmm. Do we want to try it one way where one partner is doing the full behavior change? Do we want to try it the other way? Do we want to see if there's a collaboration between the two of us? Let's go for there. And I have ideas. I don't want to go into that specific example in detail of how to collaborate on that, but that's what I think is really key.
Oh yeah.
Is when you're collaborating, honoring, like, let's not just sit in one assumption that only one partner has behavior change to be made, because we're probably going to look that there's an equally difficult behavior change that you're avoiding doing when you're asking your partner to change.
I just want to point the finger at my partner.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot easier. And to be fair, like, that's the thing is,
I don't have to change anything. You have to change so I don't have to change, I think is almost what it's like. Like, I don't like being this way. I don't like that you're this way. I don't like that I'm this way. And one of us has to change, and it's not going to be me.
Well, yes. I'll be a little more like, compassionate in a space of like, because that does happen. And it also happens where it's like, generally, I do give trust that most partners have tried what they know how to do to change. And the demands and requests and frustrations come because they've already exhausted what they know how to focus on. And now they are trying to ask their partner for something.
Yes.
In addition to what you're saying that I do agree with, is it's a lot easier to focus on, ooh, my partner's doing or not doing a thing that's frustrating for me, so I'm going to address that part because that's the only part I'm looking at. I'm talking about in couples therapy, we get to not just point a flashlight at our partner, we also turn the lights on completely and look at the entire picture. We see the entire room, both parts of the relationship.
And ideally assist in our partner seeing it that way as well. And we're not forcing, but I think being able to be clear with our partner on what it's like for us to see it the way that we see it. We don't need them to see it the exact same way. Most of us are hoping, searching for empathy and validation and The other day, because we're in the middle of kind of like a move with life adjustments, I'll leave it at that. I remember getting a lot of stuff done. And I have like a hip problem right now, so I'm not as mobile as I used to be. And my partner texted me, he's like, wow, I don't know how you got all that done. That's so impressive. Like, that must have been tough. Would it have been nice? I know we say that colloquially. It would have been cool if he were available off shift to help me with some of that stuff, but he wasn't. And so I was like, it needs to get done. My main goal is that it gets done. I'll do as much as I can, ask for help whenever he gets home for the rest, and go from there. And his validation in seeing it was so helpful to me, rather than it being like, oh, cool, or oh, nice. So sometimes it's actually not only that I'd like you to pitch in and do those things, I'd like you to recognize me for when I do that as a contributor and as a provider in my own way. And that can help your partner then the next time, because you weren't nagging to get it done and you showed initiative as well and vocalized the desire properly for appreciation. Your partner is so much more likely to want to give that to you because you're doing it out of the genuine like goodness of your heart. And you're also calling yourself to task. You're not sitting there. I remember working, I don't even know how many years ago this was, working with a family, I believe it was. And one of the problems was finger pointing, non-clinical term. well, you don't do this. Well, that's because you don't do this. Well, that's because like misattributions all around. And that leads to our next episode about resistance and accountability in some ways, resistance to accountability also, that the pattern was, I'll give a general theme. I want the house tidy, but I'm also not going to tidy my stuff, but I expect everybody else to have their stuff tidy. You can't ask for somebody to do something that you don't do or you're not willing to do. In this case, like, we're not talking about asking for help with something you can't do. We're talking about like, if I leave my stuff everywhere, but I don't want you to leave your stuff everywhere, that's a double standard. Again, not many partners are going to be motivated to change a double standard. So when you're saying it does require behavior change, it really does require behavior change. And I told them, I'm like, nobody is allowed to complain unless your side of the street is clean. And they came in like two sessions later. They're like, we're good. Like, that fixed us. Done. We learned to stop complaining until we did our chores. And then we realized that everybody had done them and there was nothing to complain about. Look at that.
Yeah. Well, and especially because when you keep your side of the street clean and you are doing that, your partner sees, oh, they're doing it, so I'm going to do my part.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, there's this positive energy built up of, hey, look, we're doing this as a team. And then you tap into this type of teamwork thing, because we are actual social bonding mammals, tribal mammals. And it's like when everyone is doing the same thing, we enjoy it. Like if you ever have worked on a project for school or work or something, it's the same thing. I get some people love projects that more than others. Yeah. I'm assuming like the whole like forced assignments. I mean like fun careers and stuff where you work collaboratively, like with one of your friends on a podcast. It's really cool. You get this sense of excitement of, hey, we've worked hard to accomplish a thing together.
Yes.
You just got to get to that point, and you start by focus on your side of the street, keep that clean, and then the momentum, positive momentum builds.
Yes. And with that,
I want to shift.
Oh, go ahead.
I just want to shift to another thing before we run out of time. Yeah. Just another part of like the clarity conundrum that I see a lot. I'm sure you do too. And it is, a scenario, again, we're starting with the basis of one partner who is like, I've said 1,000 times, and the other partner is like, what? I've never heard that, or not there. Because one pattern I see with couples is that partner who shares something a million times, the other partner responds back with, okay, I understand. And then they like kind of just like go into problem solve mode, or they go somewhere else. And this is such a common thing in so many contexts of relationship. That's why I want to talk about this for a few minutes.
Yeah.
That there's a huge difference of the listener of whatever is being shared thinking they understand versus the person sharing feeling like they've been understood.
Huge difference. So true.
Yeah. So first of all, the listener just sharing, I understand, oftentimes isn't enough.
True.
Because you're assuming you actually do, because in your head, you're going, cool, I hear it. I've made the correct conclusions. I've gotten it done. Let's move on. And it's well-intentioned. But unless you actually slow things down on these important things that tend to get missed in communication, you're not going to be sure exactly what your partner's doing unless you check with them.
Yeah.
That's where active listening comes in. Whole separate thing I don't want to get into, but we've talked about a bunch on the podcast.
We have a whole episode on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for that, you do some active listening, you check back, you validate, you share what you've understood until the sharing partner feels understood. And so here's the way to kind of like think about this too, is the partner listening doesn't get to check the box of, okay, I understood my partner. The person sharing gets to check the box, I feel understood now.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's already a little complicated, but it's a somewhat simple way to try to work through. If you're finding like that one topic that you just keep missing each other in communication about, do that. Look for, if I'm the one sharing, let's not move on to problem solving or collaboration or resolving a thing until we check the box together that I feel understood by what I'm sharing.
Yes.
Which means don't accept from your partner that they say, cool, I get it, I'm good, let's go on. Oh, wait, I want to make sure I do feel completely understood. It's such a common thing in relationships. It's probably universal. I'm just going to assume that there's this dynamic that happens in almost every relationship.
Oh, absolutely. And I think part of the dynamic also comes from not voicing some expectations or some hopes maybe in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And operating on assumptions and our family of origin or our last relationship, what we liked and didn't like. And unless we say it out loud, and this is what I've talked about, this like unverified expectations and assumptions lead to resentment is like one of the quotes that I have people live by. If I never told them, or if I told them not directly, or I didn't keep my side of the street clean, or I wasn't appreciative, like all the things we've talked about in today's episode, then how could I reasonably expect them to get it or to be able to actively listen and listen until I feel understood? Because they probably don't feel understood. They might have been like, you asked for that, I did it for you, you never said thank you. And as humans, if we don't get an acknowledgement for something that we've been asked to put effort towards, we slowly lose motivation for it. And I think we've talked about this in the love languages episode, the functions of behavior, when it's you do it because it feels good, sensory. You do it because you can escape or avoid something. You do it because you get attention or connection, or you do it because you get something tangible, a thank you, a paycheck, etc. If the only motivation for a person to do something, even actively listen, is so that they don't get yelled at or their partner feels understood, but they don't feel understood, that might happen once or twice. And eventually the person's going to go, yeah, there's nothing in it for me. And there are going to be times, especially in a long-term partnership where you're raising a family, whatever that looks like, you're having a household, plus you're having a romantic relationship. There will be times where you have to do it and there is nothing in it for you. It's actually truly only for the greater good of everybody. And it's not sacrificial. It's more compromising and generous and from a place of gratitude that you want to give it because you like the overall peace, even if you don't directly benefit from it that exact moment you did whatever it was.
Yeah. And that makes me spin off a little bit into a new related idea of like, oftentimes we can have this like back and forth relationship of, I shared a thing that I thought was clear. My partner said, didn't say, didn't do whatever. And it clearly didn't work out. And then I clarified at the end, but in like a, hey, this wasn't great kind of way. I didn't love how this went. And if you just leave it there, there can be an assumption of, okay, I clarified, my partner got it, good. But to relate to what you just shared is, but that's kind of in the like, uh-oh, oopsie, a mistake was made space.
Got it.
And for some people, that can feel really scary, and it can be harder to remember. Like, if I'm hearing from my shame, exactly, yeah. Shame, exactly. That's like, ooh, even well-intentioned, I didn't do it right, I feel shame. And that can lead to a whole other host of like negative things. But even in just shame, that's going to be hard. We know in our brains, it's harder to remember things when we're in that emotion.
Oh, yeah.
Except for protective trauma responses, because it's a trauma experience. Shame hurts. So the point is, like, we actually go inward in those moments as opposed to relational outward for a lot of us. Therefore, you want to again, back to your idea, be looking for those opportunities to have those positive feedbacks. And then also, if this little back and forth happened, I thought I said something clearly, something was off with my partner, I corrected my partner, little shame moment, little criticism. Know that they've, that's the first wash. Do it three times.
Yeah.
Not three criticisms. I'm saying next time the scenario comes up, have a friendly reminder.
Yeah.
Hey, there you go. This is a thing. Let me clarify this again. We talked this last time. Cool. Got it. And then when they do it the right time, ooh, boom, third time. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. There you go.
Yes.
You're letting your partner experience the clarity three times in a row and shifting from a shame experience into a joy experience. You do that, you're going to really clean up the clarity in your relationship, and you're going to actually get the type of responsiveness you're hoping for from your partner.
Without the need for shame. And to be determined, I know that shame can, I'm not advocating for it when I say this, shame can shift a behavior in the short term. It will not lead to true behavioral change in the long term. Mm-hmm. And that's also why it's so important to stop criticizing at or your way into a behavior change, whether it's yourself or your partner. And you'll be surprised how much you will see a positive benefit to not needing to use shame. If it is something also that your partner is trying to be mindful of, they, chances are, don't want to feel shamed for it. They don't want to have you come in with criticism and contempt, two of the four horsemen, and be like, oh, really? Socks on the floor again, you lazy piece of whatever. I would never do that. Tell me if that would motivate you if we were in an alternate reality and you and I are partners and that's what I came in and tried to motivate you with. What would you do with that?
Well, same thing as like, just imagine like anyone you, imagine you don't know the person and they come in and just say like, and they, and you just led with, hey, your socks are dirty, get them off. You'd be like, who are you? I don't want to be around you ever. Like, that's weird. Yeah. So same thing, that imaginary universe. Like, I'd be like, ugh. Now, because I have a relationship with you, or if you have a relationship with someone already, you might the first time go, uh-oh, ugh, but now I feel bad about myself. And again, it goes back to my idea, that thing like, yeah, I might try to remember and feel bad about that, but there's going to be baggage associated to it. It's going to be really difficult for me to maintain that over time or feel good about it, unless I'm just looking for a power imbalance where I'm looking for, okay, I'm scared of this person, so I don't want to feel that shame again, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
That's not the template we're going for. We're going for, I love this person. I want to do things because I care about this person. They matter to me. And that's how when we throw shame at someone, like, hey, pick up your socks, we're trying to tell them so that in our head, we're like, see, they know if they love me, they'll pick up their socks. But when it comes out in the shame experience, that's actually a blocker to feeling the love connection, because now you've got the fear shame in there. Mm-hmm. Instead, leaning into a place of appreciation, gratitude, and joy with your partner when you're looking at things that you care about in your relationship.
Yeah.
Like behavior change. But also, sorry, Santa, and I know we got to like wrap real soon, sure. But I know we're focusing on like kind of behaviors because it came from the example I started with. All of this stuff, I was just kind of thinking about this. This isn't just about clarifying requests and behavior changes in relationship.
True.
This is also just about being understood and sharing, this is my experience. You know, these things we're saying like are also can be as simple as, can you understand me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Just a heads up.
Yes. And wanting to clear up that, the clarity conundrum and be more clear. If what you're after is a healthier, more equitable relationship, then it is your role as the partner, but any of you listening who are a partner or even a roommate, like honestly, it's your role to be clear as to how it would impact both of you positively. And what I want to, I know I've said that before in the episode, but I want to add is taking ownership also helps your partner to be less confused as to why you're asking, why it's important, et cetera. You're clearly laying it out. So if there is a miscommunication or there's further confusion afterwards, you can go back and revisit and say, from what I, and not, again, not gaslighting, like, that's not what I said. It's like, from what I recollect, I mentioned this, you had said this, we agreed upon this. I could be wrong. That is one of the best phrases to ever learn in a relationship and just fall on the knife first. I could be wrong. And please let me know if I am. We use that all the time in therapy, usually before we read you like a book, but let me know. I could be off on this perfect yeah. interpretation,
yeah.
close to perfect, what have you. We can be wrong. Actually, no, you didn't say that. You said Friday. Oh my gosh, you're right. I totally yeah. did. I'm so sorry. And being able to say I'm sorry, what a gift. Taking accountability. This leads perfectly into what we'll talk about next yeah. episode.
Yeah. Because mistakes happen. Maybe you thought Friday, you said Thursday.
Yes.
Oops. And you didn't catch it in the moment because yes. why would you? Right. You didn't catch it. And then your partner just heard Thursday and they didn't know it was supposed to be Friday. Or just also our memories are just off. It could have been, hey, yeah. I remember thinking Friday and then was going to say it. And then we moved off the subject. And then, oh, it never actually came out that it was supposed to be Friday.
Yeah.
So being able to like just be okay with taking accountability and know that, hey, we're humans, mistakes can happen, and not just your partner's mistakes, you can make them, is so key.
Nobody likes to admit to it, but I think that's one of the best things to do, be able to do in a relationship, is take ownership and accountability, and that is what we'll dive into the next time we meet. But I think you have a wrap-up note.
Well, I have one more thing. I don't know if we have time. So yeah. when you said also take accountability, there's another thing I'm going to go real quick into about when we're sharing, to clear up little tips and tricks. One is take accountability for how much you share, as in filter yourself. Think about the words you're doing yeah. and be thinking about what's the important message. Because one of the things I see all the time in relationships in my office is someone like starts with like their point, but then they kind of snowball, or they're kind of just more kind of like processing out loud and sharing it all. And then their partner is like, okay, I understand. But they don't, because there was 20 things in there,
like,
and we can only remember two.
But you lost me.
Yeah. yeah. So that's another thing, is there can be for some people this longing in a very close, intimate relationship to be able to just emotionally and thoughtfully blurt out.
Yep.
And there's time for that, to be like, I don't want to have to like think hard about what I'm sharing. I want to be able to share freely, safely, and openly. But that's one kind of discussion. That's different than, there's something important I would like to help you understand about me.
Yes.
So take accountability about how you're sharing, your attitude, your words choice, so that it is directly clear. And then also the amount you share at one time.
Yes.
Because you're set, you want to take accountability to set your partner up to receive the information clearly. So there's like five things we dive into on that, but I think at the very key, that gets me what I want out before we have to wrap.
Yeah, that sets the foundation for what we can dive more further into next time, and be clear one thing at a time. It doesn't mean your process is not valid, but I've given this example a lot. It's like I call it the labor and delivery example. Labor is the gross, like, screw you, I hate you, you did this to me, how could I, like, you're going through the mess, just the yeah. process. And then afterwards you're like, oh, look what we made, like the delivery. The process yeah. is your responsibility to go through by yourself, with a partner or with a therapist, with a journal. It's your job to muscle through that, so that in the delivery, when you're telling your partner, earlier, I felt this, I thought this, my brain went here, you're more narrating and truncating. And then I realized all of those points led me to this. And that's why I want to share this. Like, be clear, even if you are mentioning more than a few things, be clear as to why that relates to your one point. And that's where you and I work with couples and individuals on what's the need. If the mm-hmm. need is the point, all the other stuff is fluff. But honestly, not every partner needs to hear that. The importance of details are something that we differ on. And that's something we can include maybe in a whole other episode, is mm-hmm. being able to know. It doesn't mean your partner doesn't care about you if they don't want to know the details. In fact, they care about you even more, because they don't want to get bogged down and distracted by what to them are unnecessary to learning the point details.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Love that. Yeah. Cool.
Yay.
We got to go. So we'll wrap up there for a clarity conundrum tips and tricks. If any listeners have questions for us or would like to address a topic on the podcast, shoot us an email. You can email us ryanandtalia@thecouplesguidepodcast.com.
Or you can slide into our DMs. Well, my questions, my Q&As, I try to do them once a week. At Talia Bombola. And if there's any question that gets asked that we think would be good for a whole episode, we will do that on a future episode. But I think we got some good ones. We got resistance and accountability. We got, we just talked about it and it just slipped my mind. the importance of details. And then we also have the active listening episode that you can go back and listen to. So enjoy.
Yeah. Special thanks to Pancake the Puppers for joining us on today's episode.
Thanks, Pancake.
Thanks so much, listeners. Take good care.